taxes, transportation, the catering controversy. It's Ask the Governor with Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell. To ask your question, call 877-366-1035 or on Twitter with hashtag WTOP. Now live from the Glass and Close Nerve Center, it's Mark Lewis and Deborah Feinstein.
Good morning. Thanks for joining us on Ask the Governor. Governor Bob McDonnell joining us live in the studio. We'll be getting to your phone calls throughout the hour. The number again is 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Governor, good to have you back with us. Welcome back.
Thank you, Mark. I've been with you about 3.5 years now, once a month. Thanks for the opportunity.
Been a little busy here of late. We're going to get to your international travels in just a moment. We'll start with the news of the day. As many of our listeners know from the reports this morning, FBI agents now interviewing a number of folks, Governor, about the relationship between you, your family, and that of a major campaign contributor, Star Scientific CEO Johnny Williams. At issue, contributions and gifts to you and your family, to your daughter's wedding, we're told, the promotion of Star Scientific products during your administration as well. We know this is an ongoing investigation. We know your comments may be limited, but what do you want the citizens of Virginia to know about this story?
Well, there's a lot that I would like to say, but because there's a ongoing trial and criminal matter involving the former chef of the mansion who was terminated and now is subject to criminal prosecution, I don't think that I can make any comments in that case. And our ongoing policy, Mark, since I've been Attorney General and Governor, is to not make any comments about any potential or actual criminal investigations. I think there's two things I would like the people to know. One is that, I've had a remarkable opportunity to serve these last 3.5 years, and that there's nothing going on at all at this time that impairs my ability to do a good job and to serve the people of Virginia. And that secondly, I've said I've been blessed to have a lot of friends, and Mr. Williams and his wife Celeste have been family friends for 4 or 5 years. But I think it's important that the people of Virginia know that nothing has been done with regard to my relationship with Mr. Williams or his company, Star Scientific, to give any kind of special benefits to him or his company, or frankly, any other person or any other company during the time that I've been governor. There was a FOIA response that we released last week that asked a question about whether any economic development grants have been given to Star Scientific. And as you know, there was one that was given back in 2002 under the Warner administration, but there's been nothing that's been given in economic development grants or incentives during the course of my administration. So other than that, I don't think that it would be appropriate for me to comment about any investigation or potential investigations that are going on.
We're going to continue our discussion with the governor on this issue and much more as we're just beginning with Ask the Governor on WTOP.
Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell and you. Now more of Ask the Governor and your host, Deborah Feinstein. And Mark Lewis.
We're just beginning here with the governor at 877-336-1035. Couple phone lines already coming on lit. We will be getting to your calls in just a few moments as folks get on board. 877-336-1035. You can tweet us. Use the hashtag AskThe or WTOP.
Thanks for being with us, Governor McDonnell. We are talking about this investigation that has now seemed to broaden now to the FBI, excuse me, which is seeking really to determine whether any of the actions that have taken place constitute a quid pro quo. And you've just said that there has not been any of that. But I have to ask you, as a personal friend with Mr. Williams, in your mind, is it worth the risk to have a notion of impropriety in this realm, to have the taxpayers of Virginia question even the relationship, whether it's a business relationship, a personal relationship, and why the two are mixed?
I've been in office for 37 years in some form or the other, from as an Army lieutenant and prosecutor, attorney general, legislator. And at every point in my career, I have tried to do the things that I think are right and honorable and have tried to diligently comply with disclosure rules. But, while I'm governor and while I've been attorney general, I have friends. And I have been blessed to have have many friends along the way. I have had many, many campaign contributors. As you know, running for office is a very expensive proposition. We're very blessed to raise a total, I think, of about $25 million to run for governor. And many people, including Mr. Williams and many others that gave significantly more than Star Scientific and Mr. Williams have contributed to my campaign. But what I can say is that from the very early days of my administration, we instructed people that they are to do the right thing under the law, and that the myriad people that come into office and ask for money for budget issues or ask for legislation or oppose legislation, that that all people should be treated the same, regardless of what their financial status is, regardless of what they've done or not done for the administration. So that's the philosophy that we
so
bring
together.
So you're
not worried that it looks too cozy?
Well, that's why we have a disclosure system, so that gifts and campaign contributions and other things that are required by law, Debbie, to be disclosed, are disclosed. And I've tried to follow those rules for 22 years. I've been filling out those forms, and ultimately, people have to determine whether they think there's any connection. I mean, there's, as you know, every campaign cycle, there literally are tens and tens of millions of dollars that are contributed to statewide candidates and local candidates. And those same legislators and same executives go and have to then govern. And numerous people ask for and lobby for things in the budget and legislation. And then it's up to the public to determine whether or not they think that resources and contributions had anything to do with public action. And what I'm telling you is that in the disclosures that that we've made here recently as requests for various people, that there have been no economic development incentives or grants or anything else that have gone out through our economic development partnership to Star Scientific or Mr. Williams or any of their affiliated companies during the course of my administration.
No promotion of their products in any way from the executive branch.
No, what I have, my role is not to promote any particular company. Mark, during my time as governor, and I think you know this, my top issue has been job creation and economic development. And so I have promoted multiple Virginia companies all over the country, around the world. You know, I just got back from 17 days in China, Japan, and California. And with me and along the way, our agriculture secretary and commerce secretary, we're helping to connect Virginia businesses with Chinese and Japanese businesses in order to expand jobs and grow jobs. It's part and parcel of my job as governor to promote Virginia business. We've had, I would say, hundreds of events, some at the mansion, some out in public forums, some press conferences, all with the idea of promoting economic development and job creation.
But Star Scientific didn't get any special consideration in any of these events.
Absolutely not. Now, there was an event that's been reported that was done, I believe, back in August or so of 2011, that the First Lady's office helped to coordinate. And I attended that for a period of time. And the purpose of that was that Star Scientific actually was giving some preclinical trial grants, as I understood it, to a couple of public Virginia healthcare systems, VCU and the University of Virginia. And so that wasn't anything from the state going to Star Scientific. The invitation that I got to come and to make that and to welcome people to this very small luncheon was for the purpose of them presenting grants to Virginia public health care system. But we have done, gosh, hundreds of events over the last couple of years at the mansion for health care groups, for business groups, for food banks, for any number of groups that have been used to try to do good things for Virginia, Mark, or try to recognize people for their accomplishments. But the leading goal that I have had since I become governor is to try to promote business, to promote economic activity, to promote job creation. And I've done it in multiple forums. I've done it at the mansion. We've done press conferences. We've done international travel. We've awarded, I'd say, tens of millions of dollars through economic development incentives that I'm empowered to help to facilitate as governor that have been awarded to multiple companies. Some of them have been public companies, some of them private companies, some of them new companies coming from abroad or other places in the country. And so part and parcel of the role as governor is to promote economic development, to provide incentives. Star Scientific is a Virginia publicly traded company. And so the one event that we facilitated through the First Lady's office was, again, as I understood it, was for the purpose of being able to have them deliver grants to Virginia University healthcare system.
Are you concerned at all about the FBI inquiry? Are you worried about it in any way?
Well, I'm not. I can only tell, I haven't read the accounts this morning. I can only say that I don't comment on whether there is or isn't an investigation. That's been my policy since I've become a governor, since I was attorney general, is not to comment on those. I don't think it's proper. What we do know is that there is a pending criminal trial for the former chef at the mansion. He's been charged with four counts of embezzlement. He was terminated as a result of some of these things by the chief of staff about a year ago, and so there have been a number of motions filed and so forth. And I just don't think, while some other people may have commented on that, Debbie, I don't think it's proper for me in any way to comment on that or on any possible or potential or actual criminal investigation. I leave that up to law enforcement and let them make any comments that they want. What I do want to assure people, back to your point, Mark, is that during my time as governor, neither Johnny Williams or Star Scientific or any other person or any other company that's come before our administration to ask for something regarding the budget or legislation or anything else has been given any special treatment. I mean, we treat people the same and fairly, regardless of their position.
When we come back, before we move from this, we want to ask you about potential changes to Virginia's disclosure law in light of the situation.
Now more of Ask the Governor with Bob McDonald. Here are your hosts, Deborah Feinstein and Mark Lewis.
Visiting with the governor on Ask the Governor, we'll be getting to your phone calls shortly. Please be patient. Just a couple of lines open at 877-336-1035. That's 877-336-1035. Governor, before we move off of this topic, yep, I do want to discuss disclosure laws in Virginia so that people understand. I'm sure they're hearing a lot about this donation to your daughter's wedding, covering some of the expenses there. $15,000 is what has been reported. In Virginia, elected officials do not have to disclose gifts that come to immediate family members. And a number of folks, including a number of lawmakers in the General Assembly, are indicating they're open to closing that loophole and making a change to the disclosure law. I understand from your office you have some similar feelings. You want to tell us about it?
Well, I think some of the discussions over the last couple of weeks have brought to light, and certainly in my own mind as well, the need to improve flexibility and transparency to give citizens the certainty that that their government is open and honest and not influenced unduly by money. Back to, I think that was Deborah's question before. And so I am certainly open to looking at proposals to improve flexibility and transparency. The Attorney General has made a proposal, for instance, that all gifts over $500 that are made be reported within 10 days to make sure that they are rapidly disclosed and not just once a year. I think that's certainly a meritorious proposal. There's been some other proposals to look at reporting gifts made to children. I think that's certainly something that should be considered. You know, I've got five children. They're all adults. Three of them don't live with me. One's married. One's going to get married soon. And so there are some reporting and accounting challenges with kids that don't actually live with you or are married, and how that would be done. But I do think that based on the discussion and the And I fully understand the issues that arose that from the gift to my daughter, because gifts right now that I get personally have to be reported. Under the current law, gifts that go to other members of the family, spouses or children, are not required to be reported. And so, you know, office holders now are complying with what the current law is. But I think legitimately there are concerns that should be addressed about what other limits should be put on spouses or other family members, particularly if they're members of your immediate family that live in your household where you know and you can control, which is a little different, let's say, than a married daughter or son that's 30 years old that lives somewhere else. But I think it's a very prudent discussion. So we're looking at that now, Mark, in my office, and thinking through what should be some changes that we'd recommend. Others have made some already, and I would expect the General Assembly to approve those. And I am strongly behind improving transparency and certainty in these reporting requirements.
And you understand why this one in particular may raise a few eyebrows, because it's not only a gift seen to your daughter, but also, you know, a father is often paying for a daughter's wedding. So in
yes.
many ways, there's a blurred line there as to who the real recipient of the gift was.
Right. And I do understand that. And I made the determination, and I think that I believed was correct, that it was a gift to my daughter, and therefore, under the current laws, did not need to be disclosed. I think, obviously, from a lot of the attention it's gotten, it has certainly now been disclosed. All of the details about that, as I indicated, that my daughter had indicated she wanted to pay for her wedding. So that there are many other details that I won't get into at this point, but I do think reform of the disclosure laws. These discussions about my reporting and the Attorney General's and perhaps others have in fact raised the level of attention that changes in strengthening the law are appropriate. And again, I'm having people in my office take a look at what we think would be appropriate and for proposals in the future.
Governor, even if you feel you followed the law, any regrets here? I mean, in hindsight, would you allow that donation to your daughter's wedding to reoccur?
Well, you know, the decision really ultimately was my daughter's. And you know, that's hard to say in retrospect. Obviously, there's been a lot of attention to that. It's caused a fair amount of pain for me personally. You know, I'm a governor, but I'm a dad, and I love my daughter very much. She had come to us early and told us what she and her husband wanted to do and how they wanted to handle things. And you know, I signed the initial report. Initial contract. I initialed it. She asked me to do that. I didn't want her to pay for a wedding, and this is something that was important to her. But this is the way families work. And I'm a dad. I've got five children. While I'm the governor of Virginia, I try to be normal sometimes and have a normal family life. And sometimes when you're working in a normal family, things aren't exactly pretty, whether you're a governor or whether you're a normal citizen. I try to be a normal citizen dad as much as possible. It's not possible that often, I have to say, given the privilege I've got of serving in Thomas Jefferson and Mr. Henry's seat. But I try to do that. And I'm incredibly busy serving the citizens, and sometimes the small amounts of time I get to serve my own family, you know, it's just real life, and it's not anything that we have you know, projected any other way than who we are. Or, you know, we're normal people, and I'm proud to be the dad of five kids, and I think I've got great kids. I'm blessed to have them, but you know, we're a normal family with all the ups and downs and pains and travails of any other normal family.
Our conversation with Governor McDonald this month continues.
Virginia Governor Bob McDonald, and you, now more of Ask the Governor, and your hosts, Deborah Feinstein and Mark Lewis.
And we'll go straight to the phones here on WTOP's Ask the Governor program. We are going to check in with Jim in Kensington. Jim, you're on the air with the governor.
Good morning, Mr. Governor.
Hey, Jim.
I have a question for you. It has been, I guess, talked about in the past that you might have possible future national political aspirations. How would you explain something like this maybe to a national voter in Colorado or Iowa or Illinois or New Jersey or something, you know, where they would understand it and then want to consider voting for you?
Well, it's only been others who have talked about national aspirations for me. I've said for a long time, I'm happy being governor of Virginia. It's been an incredible thrill for me. We've got an awful lot accomplished, the lowest unemployment rate now in 4 years, record surpluses, major transportation, education reform. I think Virginia's in pretty good shape. And I've said every time I've been asked, at least on this show, that my focus is on being governor of Virginia, and that's what it'll be for the next 9 months.
Governor, we want to talk about your recent trip. As we alluded to at the beginning of the program, you were just back from an economic development mission in Asia. We
yeah.
understand you opened an agricultural trade office in Shanghai.
Yep.
Give us kind of an overview of the trip, what was accomplished, and the significance of Virginia having this office in Asia.
Well, we have, again, economic development has been the centerpiece of our administration to get people back to work. When you have a 7.3% unemployment rate when you take office, it's got to be marked. So the reason we're down to lowest unemployment rate now in 4 years, and a piece of that has been reaching out to other states and other countries. You know, to get the deal, you got to go look people in the eye, explain why Virginia is the best place for Virginia business. You bring people with you that can advocate your cause, and you make agreements. So we went to California, China, and Japan. Enormous potential in China. I went to 2 years ago, and just in the 2 years since I've been there, agriculture has gone now. China's gone now to the largest trading partner for agricultural products with Virginia. $632 million last year, nearly tripled in the last couple of years. So that's just an idea of what these economic development trips will do. We've made a couple announcements over there. Let me give you a couple specifics. One, we went to a couple of the ports, Ningbo and Dandong, that do business with the Port of Norfolk to expand our trade routes in the future. When the Panama Canal is done, the route between Asia and Crane and Port of Norfolk is going to be unbelievably enhanced. Secondly, we got an agreement 2 years ago that's now coming to fruition here in about 2 weeks to have CCTV, the largest Chinese television station, is going to do a documentary about Virginia. First time they've ever done it. I think it's starting in the second week in May. Thirdly, we're going to have a couple of significant announcements on wine, on soybeans, and other agricultural products. And we did open up an agricultural trading office in Shanghai. The U.S. Consular, Mr. Griffiths, the U.S. Consul General from the U.S. to Shanghai, mm-hmm. was in attendance and helping to celebrate that achievement, because we see that the need for certain types of U.S. products, especially things like staple corn and soybeans and logs and chicken, thing like that, are something they need. We also had a visit, as I mentioned, with the Chinese government to try to get these bans on Virginia imports lifted. There's been a ban on Virginia logs that we finally, after meeting with the ambassador last year, got temporarily lifted for the last 9 months. We're trying to effectuate a permanent lifting of that ban, Mark, to get logs. That's tens of millions of dollars a year. And also poultry products. They've been banned for 6 years, imports from Virginia to China. That's a huge issue for the Shenandoah Valley, and it was alleged to be related to some avian flu from many years ago. But we got a team of Chinese scientists now that came to Virginia last month to evaluate the chickens and the areas in the western part of the state, and we're hopeful that that can be lifted. So, I mean, that's just a few things. We're going to have several other announcements that we think that we signed MOUs over there that I think will lead to concrete deals we'll be able to announce soon.
All right, more with the governor coming up in your phone calls on Ask the Governor.
Now more of Ask the Governor with Bob McDonald. Here are your hosts, Deborah Feinstein and Mark Lewis.
Welcome back to our program. We are going to go right to the phone lines, and we will talk with Wayne now, calling from Clifton. You're on the air, Wayne.
Good morning, Mr. Governor.
Hi, Wayne.
This past week, my wife took 4.5 hours to drive from Clifton to Richmond, which is about the same amount of time as it takes to drive to New York. I'm wondering what kind of things you can do to provide alternatives to 95, such as, say, better and more frequent rail transportation between Northern Virginia and the rest of the state.
Well, thanks for your call. As you know, that was a top focus of the last couple of years, but particularly this year, where we got a significant transportation funding package passed. I made a proposal first day of the session. I urged the General Assembly to not leave without getting significant transportation funding reform and infrastructure investment done, and they got it done. So it will generate $300 million a year solely for Northern Virginia, and then Northern Virginia will get its share of about another $800 million or so. There are a significant number of projects now in the six-year plan that will be able to be funded, and part of that will be improvements along the 95 corridor itself. As you know, I had earlier proposed tolling of 95 and putting all that money in infrastructure improvements in 95 for some of the widening, some of the interchanges. But I do think rail is a big deal. We just got the first of the restoration of passenger rail from Richmond to Norfolk, Virginia, restored higher speed rail. And so that's a huge plus. And we're looking at how we can improve rail transportation throughout the Commonwealth, because a fair amount of this money will go to rail, not just to rail and mass transit, not just to roads and bridges. But I think you're going to see over the next couple of years, between the 2011 bond package, which was about $3 billion, and this new transportation bill, which will be $5 to $6 billion over the next 5 years, you're going to see dramatic improvement and progress in transportation. And Northern Virginia, being a third of the state, is going to get its fair share of the monies and its regional component that was just passed here, and it'll be effective July 1st. So expect improvements, but you know, once the money is approved, there's obviously a time lag in planning and infrastructure acquisition and land acquisition, et cetera, in order to get these projects done. But it will benefit dramatically Northern Virginia.
Last time you were here, you were still in the process of making amendments before that the veto override session. Are you pleased with the way things shook out in the final?
Of course, they passed all my amendments, so I'm pleased that they got that done, and now the bill is effectively in the light. I didn't actually have to sign it, because once all the amendments are approved, it becomes. Law. Now comes the hard work, though, Mark, and that is each of the regional entities have got to make their decisions about what the priorities are on a regional basis. That's being done through the CTB. Local input is, of course, critically important. And then comes the arduous process of actually acquiring the land, the right-of-ways, doing all the legal things that need to be done, finding the right vendors, bidding things out, and then ultimately getting things built. So I just want people to know up here that there is a dramatic relief on the way. Some of the bonds that we got approved back in 2011, they are actually working now to improve roads. But this major transportation bill that got passed this year, with a lot of support from people in Northern Virginia, that's probably, to see that money in action is probably going to be, you know, a course of the next year or two.
WTOP's Hank Silverberg has spent an interesting morning in traffic today, and he's got some transportation questions.
This is a perfect segue.
Likely story, Hank. Mm-hmm.
Perfect segue for my 2.5-hour commute. One of the things on that six-year plan you mentioned is what's called a north-south corridor of significance, which is transportation speak for maybe we need some more roads here. Okay, but there's a significant number of people within that corridor, including six members of the General Assembly, who are saying that putting a highway around the Manassas battlefield, the words I heard yesterday were frivolous and unnecessary. Okay, there's a significant number of people who don't want the roads in the battlefield, Route 29 and Route 234, cut off because they're significant commuter routes. And yet this is now on the six-year plan, and we've heard that it's pushing to be fast-tracked. What about that project? There's a lot of opposition to it.
Well, Hank, after 22 years in the legislature, I can say that virtually every major transportation plan, there's some opposition to it. There's generally some lawsuit that takes place. This is not a new idea. In some respects, this idea has been around for some 20 years. Governor Warner actually was the first one to suggest putting it into the six-year plan as a way of relieving traffic congestion in the western part of the metro area. It's a route that goes from 66 up through Loudoun County, west of Dulles, to take some of that that major traffic that's now using 28. Take that off. So it's a project that has, for at least I think 10 years, been around. It's in the Loudoun. It's been approved, I think, and recommended by the Loudoun County Board. It's in the Prince William County Plan. It's in the regional plan. So here's what I would say, though, is that there is dramatic and ample opportunity for public comment on all of the road projects that that are in the six-year plan. While the CTB, the Commonwealth Transportation Board, reinserted it and actually was able to put some funding towards a study of this idea, it's a long way from being done. I understand there's a June 13th public hearing. And so if people are opposed to it, come out and let them know what they think. You know, I appoint people in the CTB, but we generally let that Commonwealth Transportation Board, with regional input and regional appointees, and there's several on here from Northern Virginia, let them make their decisions. After that, there'll have to be at least another vote of the CTB before it's final. So there's plenty of opportunity. But this is not something that just came out of nowhere. It's been talked about for a long time, and since the Warner administration has been at least discussed by the CTB.
All right, we'll be back with the governor.
Virginia Governor Bob McDonnell and you. Now more of Ask the Governor and your hosts Deborah Feinstein and Mark Lewis.
Thanks for being patient on the phone lines. We are going right to the phone lines. We're going to Mount Vernon. We're going to talk to John. John, you're on with the governor. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Governor.
Hi, John.
Bishop Byerton parent and Naval Academy graduate. I've always been a big fan of yours.
Oh, that's great.
I'm a little confused of some of the messages I'm seeing about reducing the taxes on gasoline and I've been driving this electric Tesla now for 4 years. I got 70,000 miles, and I see no incentives in Virginia. I see them in a lot of other states that are taking the lead on that to move us more toward total electrification, not this hybrid stuff. Everybody drives a hybrid. In fact, the HOV is clogged with hybrids. It should be electrics and HOVs. And yet, and now even a tax for those who don't buy gas to help pay for their fair share of the road use. So I'm just wondering why Virginia is not in keeping, you know, with its advanced technology, which, you know, it has one of the best technology centers in the country, in promoting, you know, the electrification and weaning us off foreign oil. And I thought...
Let's get the governor's answer.
Yeah. Well, John, it's hope your kids enjoyed Ireton. That was a great experience for me. And hello to all my friends in Mount Vernon, where I grew up. I'd say a couple things. One is a critical element of this transportation plan that I insisted on that was in my original proposal is to reduce the tax on gasoline. In fact, my proposal was to eliminate it and convert it solely to a sales tax. What the General Assembly decided to do was to reduce it by about 35%. So it'll be, instead of 17.5 cents a gallon, it's going to be an equivalent of about 10.5, 11 cents a gallon. So we will have, I believe, the lowest gas tax in the lower 48 states, and hopefully that shows up at the pump July 1st or shortly thereafter. But one of the concerns that many of us had is that over time, with electric cars, natural gas cars, hybrid cars, other alternative fuel cars, that as those cars pay zero gas tax or very little, and in the case of hybrids, that there would not be the revenues coming in to fund the roads, even though those cars use the roads. So what I did is the General Assembly had recommended $100. We had VDOT do the math, and since the gas tax was being cut about 35%, we basically reduced the hybrid or the alternative fuel vehicle fee to be $64, which is about the same amount. We took about a third off of that. But that means that people that drive an electric car or drive a hybrid car will be contributing something towards the maintenance and construction of roads. People may not remember, but last year we actually started this with a $50 fee on electric cars. So electric now will go to from 50 to 64, and everybody else that has an alternative fuel vehicle goes to 64. I think it's important, though. Look, I'm a big supporter of going to alternative fuel vehicles. I just converted or ordered 6 months ago the conversion of all of our state fleet from gasoline to natural gas. We're going to be the first state in the country to do that. It's cleaner. It's cheaper. It's less than half the cost.
Governor,
so
we've had a lot of emails and calls about the alternative fuel issue as this became final with the passage of
sure.
the bill. It seems that a lot of folks who drive these cars are upset about having to pay this $63.
Well, Mark, they may be, but think about this. If everybody used an alternative fuel vehicle or used an electric vehicle, how much gas tax would we have coming in? None. See, that's the problem. This was a practical solution that we started looking at to say, why do we have this problem in being able to have sufficient gas tax revenues We've had about a 55% drop in gas tax revenues because of inflation. And then because of CAFE standards, i.e. miles per gallon going from 10 to 27 over the last 25 years, and alternative fuel vehicles, it's a math problem.
But they say it is punitive. They think they're doing the right thing for the environment,
well,
and
they're
being penalized.
They are, and they should be. They should feel rewarded for that. It's a good thing, but they still have to contribute their share of paying for construction and maintenance of roads. So it's a different issue. It is a good thing. And like I said, I'm doing it with the state fleet because it's a good thing. It's cheaper, it's better for the taxpayers, and it's better for the environment. But you still have to be able to pay the bills. And so I understand some people have a different view, but I did reduce it from 100 to 64 based on the math that I got from VDOT, and I hope they feel at least better about that.
Got a handful of things we want to get to before we're done here. Hank, let's get back to you.
Yeah, I just wanted to go back a minute. One of the side effects of the north-south corridor we were discussing is the impact on I-66.
Yes.
We've got the hot lanes on the Beltway. We've got the hot lanes coming to I-95, but I-66 remains one of the biggest problems. And there's a lot of talk that this new north-south corridor is going to ignore the 66 problem or not deal with it.
Yeah.
What's in store for 66 besides a couple of little places where they're adding like an extra one?
Well, I can't give you specifics, but it's a very good point, and that is that I understand from the Secretary of Transportation that before any work would be done to actually have this this bypass that would connect with 66. That's a legitimate concern, Hank, with more traffic being dumping into an already very busy roadway, that the improvements that are planned along 66 will take place first, so that you're not going to have more cars along this bypass that would be dumping into a 66 that's not already upgraded and improve. So there is a phasing approach that would be done. And I understand the historic preservation issues with the battlefield. I'm sure all that will be worked out as well. But please, if people have concerns, come to the June 13th hearing. There'll be other public hearings. There'll be other votes. None of this is a fait accompli. It's been, like I said, it's been talked about since Mark Warner's administration. And we're going to make sure that full citizen input is heard before any final decisions are made.
Got to ask you about the Memorial Bridge, because it is in disrepair, and there will be repairs that will be made in the near future. It might even be closed for a few months. And that begs the question, isn't there a need for another crossing over the Potomac River? And if so, is there something you can do about that? Is there some pressure you can exert?
That's one of the things I know we've had some discussion on. Unfortunately, there hasn't been some of the local political will. There hasn't been the money, Debbie, for a long time. But now that there is, and money will be coming into the Northern Virginia, I think it's up to the CTB and the regional transportation planners to determine how high that priority is. I had some general discussions with Governor O'Malley a year and a half ago, because that obviously affects Maryland as well, and to see what interest they've got. They made some improvements, as you know, up there that could potentially fit in with another crossing from Virginia to Maryland. So these are just in their very formative stages as far as these kinds of discussions. But the bottom line is there are more resources now, but the regional planners will be a loud voice to be heard. And ultimately, those decisions about where the money's spent will be the Commonwealth Transportation Board. So I encourage everybody that's got specific feelings on these particular needs, go to the CTB, make your voice heard, and these decision makers will make the right decision.
Governor, once again, the hour has flown by. We appreciate you coming by. As always, we'll see you next month.
Thank you, Mark.
Take
appreciate
care.
It. Be back.
Thanks, Governor.